chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Brian Citron on the show today. Brian is an author, a serial entrepreneur, the president of Chiropractic Advertising, and the founder of LeadFlows.com. Brian Citron, I have been looking so forward to this time with you on the Something Extra podcast. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today.
Hey, I'm so excited to be on the show with you, Lisa.
Well, I know one thing's for sure. You and I are going to have fun, and we've got so much to talk about. And I know that, you know, my prayer is that, you know, the things that we talk about today is really going to help our leaders that are listening on their own leadership journey. I know you have so much wisdom to share, but you and I met recently. It was very recent, Brian, that we met. And here's the deal. I instantaneously liked you. I'm like, I love this guy. You know, I felt connected to you. I wanted to champion you and all the things that you're doing. You truly are a remarkable young man, and you just have so much wisdom and experience to share beyond your years, I think. But, you know, we're going to attempt to dig into all of that. But, you know, before we do, you have something really spectacular that is getting ready to happen in August. And we're so excited about this because we dearly, dearly love this family that you're going to be connected to. So tell our listeners what is happening. You know, how did this all come about? So if you just kind of tell your story a little bit there, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely, Lisa. So I'm engaged to Chelsea Perry. She's the most elite woman I've ever met in my life. I have more in common with her than anybody I've ever met. And it's really a God story. I was living in Oklahoma at the time and writing a book. And I had just finished my manuscript and I was going through the editing process. And I heard that women read books a lot more than men read books. And as an entrepreneur and marketer, I was like, I have to make sure that my book is tailored to the audience who's going to actually buy and read my book. And so I made the cover, you know, pretty and appealing to women. But then I was praying and figuring out who could I have read the book that would have a good perspective of if this book has female appeal. And my my cousin's best friend, or one of her best friends, came to mind. And so I reached out to Chelsea Perry, and it was easy talking to her because she's so close with my cousin that it felt like I was talking to a family member. And I texted her, and we didn't know each other super well. And we had met over the years, and I'd had her number, but we didn't really talk. And I texted her, and I asked her if she would read my book. And she said yes. And funny thing is, she didn't even have my number saved in her phone because she'd gotten a new phone number. And she said yes because she felt good about it, even though she didn't even know it was me texting her. And then within about 15 minutes of her doing some research, she figured out who it was. But it's funny because she was in the process of finalizing her own book. And her book actually ended up coming out a week before my book came out. unrelated to each other without happening. It was wild. But mm-hmm. but she said yes, and in the process of her reading my book, Wild Expectance, it was a memoir about my journey moving out to Los Angeles and being a missionary out there and mentoring students mm-hmm. at UCLA and then USC, and then taking 28 mission trips to Haiti, taking 6 to Vietnam, and until eventually launching my business that I'm running right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a memoir about that season of my life. And whenever I sent her the book to read, she found out who I was. She found out, you know, the difficulties, the struggles, but also the successes and the wins and the being obedient to God. And through mm-hmm. that process, you know, I went into her heart and she developed feelings for me. And in the process of me talking with her in the editing process, I developed feelings for her. And I'm excited to say that now we're getting married.
It's going to be incredible. And for those, I mean, Brian, we have people that listen to the Something Extra podcast from all over the globe. So if you're not from St. Louis, you may or may not know this family, but the Perry family is a very just faith-filled, amazing family here in St. Louis. Jeff Perry, Chelsea's dad, is the senior pastor for a very large church here called St. Louis Family Church. And they also have Service International, where they will take scads of people like for to help with national disasters. I mean, he's very, very well known here in St. Louis, but that whole family is just incredible. So, I mean, truly, and then getting to know you, Brian, like I said, you're a remarkable young man. So, boy, I mean, the two of you together, I cannot wait to see what God is going to do, because you guys are going to be a powerhouse. You're going to be a powerhouse for the kingdom. You're going to be a powerhouse for all good things for people. And so I'm so excited about it. But, you know, tell me, you know, before we get into, like, you know, everything you've done, your book, I've got a copy of your book here. We're going to dig into that. Wild Expectance, Start Living Your Life, How God Designed It. Just, you know, you've done so many things, but I want you to tell our listeners a little bit how you grew up, because I think that has a lot to do with your story and what you're doing today. I think you grew up at Lake of the Ozarks, correct?
Yes.
So, yeah.
I grew up in Lake of the Ozarks. My father was a secular Jew, and he was non-religious, didn't want anything to do with Jesus. And my mother was a very devout believer. And she wanted to make sure that both myself and my brother knew Jesus, right? And so it seemingly every single time I would want to go to church, my dad would like want me to help him with something. You know, at least it felt like that, right? And so he doesn't want help all day until it's time for me to go to church, and suddenly he wants help. And so I felt like I had to fight at times to go to church, especially, you know, sometimes, you know, at nighttime and like midweek services and stuff when he would want help. But I fought because I had a conviction, you know, and it was difficult growing up with him. And thankfully, he eventually did give his life to the Lord about 5 years before he passed away.
Oh, but that's awesome.
It was difficult. You know, I love my father, but growing up, he was very verbally abusive. He was very antagonistic to the gospel. And whereas some households, you're kind of forced to go to church, and I felt like going to church was a relief from the craziness at times.
Well, thank goodness for your mom, you know, but I chuckle about this though, Brian, because, you know, what you're doing today and what you've done through, you've done so much, and we're going to talk about all this, but it seems that entrepreneurism has been in your blood from a very young age. You started your first business when you were just 8 years old, selling rocks. And yes. I love that story. You went on to sell candy. You had a gumball machine business at the age of 14. And that business, and we'll talk about that, but that business was very pivotal to something else that happened to you after college. I mean, you know, if you had not had that gumball business, you know, you may not have been able to do what you did after college. You started a t-shirt business when you were 16. I mean, my goodness, you know, where in the world do you think all this stemmed from, Brian?
You know, it was naturally an innate gift inside of me to do that. You know, my parents were entrepreneurs. You know, my dad's size Jewish. You know, they say about stereotypes, they're typically true. And so I felt like I was naturally good at business and or be inclined towards that. And I know my parents were chiropractors, so they had their own business. And and side note, I think this is pretty funny. So Chelsea, also around a similar age, was also selling businesses. And she was selling pencil shavings when she was like around that age. And then she was selling jewelry. And it's hilarious because she's sharing her stories about how she would have all these little businesses selling stuff as a kid. And how she was told that she can't sell stuff at the back of the church meeting.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm selling stuff.
A little bit of conflict of interest there.
Exactly. And I remember I was walking one time. There was a product and service show. And all these different businesses had booths there. And so I show up with my box of rocks as like a little like 8, 9, 10-year-old walking around from booth to booth to booth trying to hustle my rocks to these entrepreneurs, business owners. You know, who's not going to buy rocks from a...
from an 8-year-old.
Exactly. And so...
And these were kind of special rocks, right? I mean, they were just... You kind of found rare rocks, right?
Yes.
You know?
So I as a junior entrepreneur, I had to have a good inventory source. And I realized that in Lake of the Ozarks, there's a bunch of tour shops. And all the tour shops, you know, they have like those big bins of rocks they sell. And there's other tour shop that closed for the season. And then everything was 50% off. And so I would go there and buy like all their crystals, you know, half off, and all their fancy rocks half off. And then I would have my inventory for the year to go sell, you know, on the school bus or at school or to other entrepreneurs at a product and service show.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. Did you become a millionaire overnight?
You know, I didn't. I didn't. You know, but it taught me valuable lessons. It taught me valuable lessons.
What did it teach you, Ryan? Give me just a couple. I mean, I could put words in your mouth. I mean, I sold pecan logs and I sold stuff too. I mean, I kind of had my first little business when I was 7. And this is just a funny side story. Some people have heard this, but I decided I'd go into flower business. And so how I got my product and my supply chain, where you went and bought your rocks, I went and stole the flowers from our neighbor's garden.
That's really funny.
And started selling, you know, but that was a pretty defining moment because my dad, I say that was one of my first leadership lessons, because when he found out that I had stolen these flowers, you know, he made me go and apologize. And, you know, so I'm like, okay, you know, if I start another business, I cannot steal my goods. I have to figure out another source.
Cost of goods sold, zero.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me some of the things that you learned. You learned how to hustle for one thing and work hard, right? Mm-hmm. Be resourceful. What else?
Well, I learned that you don't have to have a job to make money, right? You can make your own path. And so I've never really had a quote unquote traditional job. I think that later in life, you know, my teens, you know, I was a cook for one summer and I was like a runner at this bar and grill. But for the most part, you know, it taught me that you don't want to trade time for money. You want to trade value for money, and you can make money a lot faster.
Oh, that's good.
Not working for other people, but finding something somebody wants and selling it to them. And even as a kid, like we didn't, I wasn't given an allowance. My friends were given allowances, but I wasn't giving an allowance as a kid. So I'm like, I had to learn to fend for myself.
Yes.
And I remember whenever I was, I think around 14 years old, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And it was talking about the importance of having, you know, residual income. And so I went out and I bought my gumball machines so I could start my residual income empire, you know, as a 14-year-old. And eventually, this is really funny. So there was a trade school right next to my high school that you could take classes in as a high schooler. And so it was basically the high school, but it wasn't, because it was like that tech school, you know?
But
all the other schools would ship in their students to go there. And because it was literally on our property, you could take every class down there and go back and forth easily, right? And I was taking marketing classes down there, and eventually an entrepreneurship class. And there was an entrepreneurship association I was a part of. And through this process, I was able to place a gumball machine in the tech school because I, quote unquote, gave 20% of it back to the marketing association. So it felt like it was like a school, you know, gumball machine, because they were making money as the business club, but I was making money by, you know, being creative.
Selling your gumballs, right.
And so we had to have like my mom, because I was a minor, sign this release sheet. And then the director of the tech school signed the sheet that said I could have a vending business. So that was probably the first contract I had signed ever, you know, for a client.
So amazing. Well, you're 14 years old. So, you know, it only stands to reason, Brian, because of all of this that you were doing at a very young age, that you would go to one of our universities here in Missouri called Missouri State University in Springfield. I know because I sat on the Missouri Technology Corporation board for 4 years. That is really a dynamic startup community with eFactory, if people are not familiar with that. But, you know, you go there and you get a degree in entrepreneurship. So it only stands to reason. But, you know, what were your aspirational goals at this time? Because I know that things kind of took a little bit of a different pivot your senior year. But, you know, what were you thinking as a young man with this? You just wanted to continue to build businesses?
Yeah, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to build businesses. I didn't want to be a missionary. I didn't want to go on the mission field. But I wanted to support missions. I felt like I was called to fund the gospel, but I didn't think I was called to actually go forth and do it in a faraway land or a different city or state. And I had just gotten done writing a business plan for my class my senior year. And so it was an 85-page business plan. So that's more like a thesis. You know, it was ridiculous how long this thing was, right? And it was my plan to launch this business and start my empire with a close friend of mine from college and just be successful in business. And then everything changed, Lisa.
What changed? Tell me about Winston Bowie.
So he was a refugee from Vietnam, and he left on the fall of Saigon to come to America. And his father was like an officer in the South Vietnamese military. And so they fled on the fall of Saigon, and they were picked up by a U.S. Navy ship and eventually resettled in Oklahoma. And he got saved in Oklahoma and gave his life to Christ. And in college, he became a campus pastor. And so he was a campus pastor in Oklahoma. And then he moved up to Missouri to be a pastor at the University of Missouri, where my brother was going to college at. And on his very, very last service, where he was announcing that he was transitioning from Missouri out to Los Angeles to pretty much pioneer a ministry at UCLA, my brother showed up at his last service, you know, a month before my brother graduates. And through that, he became my brother's mentor. My brother connected me to him, and he told me that he could teach me a lot about business if I moved out to Los Angeles and did an internship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it went in one ear and out the other ear. And I remember my senior year in college, I was praying about the direction of what I should do. And just that conversation kept coming back in my mind. And I'm thinking, I think God might be speaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, Lisa, God can speak to you through faint thoughts and through your memories of other conversations. And there's a variety of ways that God can speak to us. It's not always a booming voice. I've never heard a booming voice of God. I don't think I've ever heard the audible voice.
Neither have I. Right.
And God can't speak to us audibly, but I feel a lot of times it's, you know, this inward knowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really sensed that God wanted me to do that. I called my brother and I told him I had a problem. And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "I think that God wants me to move out to Los Angeles, one of the most expensive cities in the world, and essentially work for free." I'm like, "This is crazy. This is not the game plan. I did not spend 4 years getting in debt to do this." And my brother said, "Well, if God's calling you to do that, you need to go ahead and call him." And so I went ahead and called Winston, and I told him that, "Hey, I'm David's brother. We met over the summer. I think that God wants me to move out to LA and do an internship with you."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Brian, you called me at the right time." And we fast forward a few months and everything's official and I'm talking with him. I told him that it was on the bottom of my list for things to do, to move out to Los Angeles and do an internship with him. And he says, "Brian, you weren't even on my list." Because we haven't taken on a new intern in a year and a half. But I was praying on the 405 highway, about to go on a week-long fast. And the Spirit of God spoke to me and told me that I was going to get an unexpected phone call very soon. And pretty much the answer better be yes. "And Brian, you called me within minutes." And that's how I ended up in Los Angeles.
Amazing. I love it. Here's a quote from Winston that I absolutely love, Brian, that he told you. He said, if you could achieve your dreams on your own, you are not thinking big enough. Wow. Such sage advice, right? Okay, so I'm going to do one more thing and then we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to read because I tell you what, that's not something that you were, was even on your radar. But I know, Brian, that, you know, you've been able to do more than you could ask or imagine, you know, and so God has just blown your mind, you know, wild expectance, right? A appropriate title for your book here, but I'm just going to read this real quick. You know, over the course of your life, you've had the opportunity to travel the world with your brother, others as full-time missionary. It wasn't easy, and there were times when I remember seeing more month than money. I thought that was really funny. As a result, I had to learn to listen to God and do what he said if I was going to survive being jobless in LA while pursuing a career as a donor-backed campus missionary. As of this writing, I've had the honor of doing missions in Haiti 28 times. Vietnam 6 times. I've traveled throughout Europe. I've even met with ministry alumni in China. I've toured Christian rock festivals. I've rock climbed through the United States. I've attended VIP parties at the American Music Awards. I've mentored some of the most influential students in the world at UCLA and the University of Southern California. This includes university professors from other nations and even a student who went on to win a gold record from RCA. Selling over 500,000 records. At the leading of the Lord in his timing, I was able to transition back into business, become a writer on Forbes.com, win one of the most coveted marketing awards in the world, the Tuchkama Award, for having made over $1 million online through a marketing sales funnel. Wow, I achieved all of these achievements while being led by God and living a missions first lifestyle. And I will tell you, it really just tears me up. Just seeing, Brian, your obedience, and it was scary. I mean, I could imagine myself being the same thing. This is crazy. This is a crazy idea. I just went to school. I've got school debt. I've got this degree. Really? You want me to go be a missionary for no money? I mean, it's got to be mind-blowing. But here's the thing I love about you, Brian. You were obedient, and you have been blessed beyond measure, and now you're getting ready to marry an amazing woman that you guys are going to go on and do amazing things together. But we do need to take a quick break. We've got so much more that I want to talk about here, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Brian Citron on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Brian Citron. We have been having so much fun talking about so many different things, but here's where we left off. Yeah, Brian felt this calling to go to LA, you know, to basically work for free. And so, you know, Brian, I mean, it is clearly one of the most expensive places to live in the country, and you didn't have a lot of money, but, you know, how did you raise the money? How did you get the money to even go and start on that journey?
So I remember I had just graduated college, and my dad's brother, who was also not a very religious Jewish man, gave me a graduation gift of $500. And so it might as well have been like $5 million. Now, it gives a lot of money to me at the time as like this 22-year-old who just graduated college with no job. And I remember I was up at a church. It was actually at Keith Moore's church up in Branson. And I was up there with my friend's parents attending. I think it might have been like a marriage conference. And like, I'm single. You know, I just remember you're up there attending a conference. And I looked around, and first off, the pastor was a very, very gifted speaker. But whenever you went into their bookstore, everything was free. And they said that each family could have 3 items for free every time they visited. And an item might be a like DVD series of 20 DVDs, or like, you know, a bunch of CDs, like literally stuff that you would pay a lot of money for at a typical, you know, church or a typical conference. You know, that might be like $50, $60 or more. And for 20 of them, it might be $100, right? And I'm like, how can they give everything away for free? And then I learned that if you call the church anywhere in the world, they will mail you their stuff for free and they will pay the shipping. And it's common business, you know, you have to, what you make has to sell for more than what it costs you, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, they're making zero and it costs them money for shipping and to print this. I'm like, this isn't a very feasible business model. I'm like, how is this possible, Lord? How can they give everything away for free? And how can they cover the shipping, the mail stuff anywhere in the world? And as I was sitting there, the Lord spoke to me in that moment. It wasn't audible, but it was an inner thought, an inner knowing that I knew he was speaking to me. And I recognized the voice of God in that moment. And the Lord said, give me that check. That's how. And I'm like, what? Give me that check. I'm like, I can't give that check. That's my baby. That's all I got. I can't give that check. That's all I have. And I sense God saying in that moment, that's all I want. That's all I have. And God was saying, that's all I want. And so I remember I got up out of church. I went into the bathroom. I'm splashing water on my face. I'm trying to figure out what to do. You know, my ministry is bankrupt before it even starts. I'm like, why didn't I cash the check? So I couldn't give it to the church. So I go there and the offering bucket's coming along and I'm looking at my friend's parents and I don't think they put anything in it. And it comes to me and I'm like, well, here's my moment. Am I going to be obedient or not being obedient? But in that moment, I really sensed God was speaking to me. And I would rather step out in obedience and be wrong than not step out in obedience and miss what God wanted me to do. Because Even if God wasn't speaking to me in that moment, if I stepped out in obedience trying to be obedient, God would see that and God would honor that, right? And so I remember that in my business law class that I could like sign the back of a check and then basically make it over to them. And so I pulled out the check and as I'm signing it, every negative possible thought came to me. Like, you know, you're going to be broke out there in Los Angeles. Your uncle's going to realize that you gave the check to the church. He's never going to give you money ever again. You know, they're going to see his cash by church. You know, it's going to cause you all these problems. And so, and of course, I mean, it's $500. It's not a big deal, right? But in that moment, like all these negative
That's all you had though, Brian.
And so I signed the check for $500 and I put it in there trying to be obedient. And then the next day I get a phone call that my business had sold, my gumball machine business. So I'm like, well, praise God. I'm like, maybe there's a correlation. There has to be, you know, my business sold for $2,000. And, you know, I was thinking I could have sold it for more, but half the machines weren't placed at that time. So like it was good to at least recoup, you know, cost of the machines and other stuff too. Right. And so that was a big deal. But then I was about to start touring Christian rock festivals that summer with a friend of mine, because I had started a t-shirt company when I was 16 and I teamed up with a friend of mine and he had a t-shirt company too. And I could sell my shirts at his booth. But more importantly, he said I could sell glow sticks at these different music festivals. Right. And, selling glow sticks, you know, they cost like 4 cents and you're selling them for $1. If you sell thousands of those things, you can make a lot of money as a young kid in his 20s. Right. And so it was my desire to sell these glow sticks at the largest Christian music festival in the world at that time up in Pennsylvania. It's called Creation Music Festival. And the problem was that they didn't allow anybody to sell glow sticks at that festival because they used glow stick sales to offset the costs of the festival. Right. And so on the very first page of the vendor packet, it said, if you sell these glow sticks, we will kick you out of the festival. Right. But I had faith though, that I was going to be allowed to sell these. And I remember my mom had dropped off the glow sticks at our booth at a different festival that was local in Missouri. And my friend laughed in her face because not trying to be disrespectful, but just how preposterous it was because nobody is allowed to sell glow sticks at this event, number one. And number two, you have to get your merchandise approved like 6 months in advance, right? And so we're at this festival and I keep telling them that I have faith that I'm going to be able to sell these glow sticks. And I keep pushing. And eventually, like, my friend, mixed with the help of another friend who helped volunteer at the festival but had seen me sell glow sticks at other festivals in the past, gets me a meeting with one of the main people in charge of the festival. And I remember it, this guy was walking by, and it looked like it was the guy that was in charge of the festival. And I asked him if he could talk about it. And he looks at me, and he says, where are the glow sticks at? And I tell him they're in our trailer. And he looks at me, and he says, they better stay there. You understand? We're going to kick you out. And I'm like, oh, my dream's crushed.
Oh, no.
Turns out that wasn't the guy. That was like the security guard. His job is to stop you from selling glow sticks. And so I go down the hill to like this trailer next to main stage, and I'm pushing and fighting to get a meeting with this guy. And they keep pushing back the volunteers, saying, no, he doesn't want to meet with you. No, you can't sell glow sticks. But I kept pushing in. And finally they go and talk to him. They come back and like, you're right, he doesn't want to talk with you. And so I go in there and I plead my case, and I say, hey, let me sell these glow sticks at your festival, please. And I'll give you half of everything I sell. It's going to help me do my mission work in Los Angeles. And he looks at me and he says, okay, I'll let you sell these glow sticks, but I don't want 50%. I only want 25%. Ugh. And we'll let you sell them in the crowd, and we'll sell you our existing inventory at cost. So they sold me all their glow sticks at cost, which I then turned around and resold. And then everybody else, all the other vendors, had to pay more than 25%. And I'm paying only 25%, and I'm able to walk around and sell in the crowd where everybody else has to stay in the vending tent. It was incredible. And then afterwards, you know, after the event, we come and bring them the money. And then he says that he'll let us sell these glow sticks at their other festival they run on the East Coast, or on the West Coast, I mean. And so then, you know, up in Washington, I'm selling glow sticks there as well for another huge festival. And because of that, you know, I ended up with like a ton of money at the end of the summer. And people could be joking about, oh, you're selling glow sticks. But I'm telling you this, Lisa, I was laughing all the way to the bank.
I bet you were. Brian, I absolutely love that story. I love it so much. And I'm glad you told that story, because, you know, there's so many lessons there. Number one, like the lesson that I get from, you know, your first story about the check from your uncle. Number one, obedience is key. Obedience is key. And when we're obedient, you know, God will take care of the rest. But also, if you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. You ended up selling, you put in your $500, you ended up selling your business for $2,000. So you got a 4X, you know, on that one. You know, and I love the story about the ghost sticks, because don't take no for an answer. I mean, you know, you could have just go, oh, you know, okay. But no, you had faith that, no, this is going to work. And it's just so, so amazing. And, you know, nothing is impossible, when you have God's favor on you.
Absolutely. And I really sense, because everybody was asking me how I could do that. How was I allowed to do this? And they gave us the right to continue selling those year after year until I didn't want it anymore. And people were asking, well, how did you get that? They didn't know how I could possibly get this opportunity. It's because I gave the $500. You know, I sense that God said, it's because you sowed the $500, that's what produced the favor and the open door for this other business opportunity. And people, sometimes they want to open door, but then they're obedient in the area of generosity where God wants to challenge you. And that's why the open door isn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Well, we've got so much more to talk about here. And I know that we're running out of time a little bit, but, you know, I want people to go, and you've done lots of mission trips. We've already talked 28 times to Haiti, 6 times to Vietnam. I would love for people to go buy your book, Wild Expectance, because they can learn all of these stories. But, you know, here's the thing. You've continued to build other businesses. I'd love for you to talk to our listeners and tell them a little bit about Lead Flows, because I'm telling you, when I heard that, I got really excited when you and I first talked, Brian, because I'm like, everybody needs more leads. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about Lead Flows. What is it? You know, so tell our listeners a little bit about Lead Flows.
Absolutely. So leadflows.com is a software tool that will consolidate every single thing that an entrepreneur needs into their business to grow. Like, especially if you're a local service-based business or a local business, you know, you have to be sending out emails, number one. You have to be sending out texts to your clients or prospective customers. Number two, you have to have an online calendar. You have to have a web presence. You have to be able to, there's so many things that you need. And so what LeadFlows does is it condenses a ton of different softwares into one tool, and it makes them work together. And you can create online sales funnels through that process. You can create online membership courses. Like if you're a coach, you can create like a whole coaching business inside of it. You can do invoicing through it. You have a VIP phone line where you can actually call your customers or call your prospective leads through that. It integrates directly into like Facebook advertising and directly into TikTok advertising, for example. It leverages AI to write content on your website and on this blog, as well as you can schedule out social media posts, leveraging AI all within one platform. And so instead of needing 10 programs and making them work together, you can have one solution to basically rule everything that you need to do. And it's really revolutionary to how we run our business, because we used to have 10 different softwares working together for my marketing clients. And now everything's done in one place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is incredible. And, you know, I want to read this for our listeners, because I want you to understand the credibility that Brian has in this space. Okay. So his foreword of his book is written by Dr. Ben Lerner. Dr. Ben Lerner is the CEO and founder of the Ultimate Influence Group. He is also a 2-time New York Times bestselling author. He wrote the foreword to Brian's book. Here's what he says. He goes, when working to achieve its success, I'm always careful to look for experts in key areas where I am not the expert. Nearly every business endeavor requires online marketing. Brian is who I turn to for expert advice in this field. As important as it is to work with the best, it is even more vital that those people love Jesus. Brian is not only a voice for digital knowledge, he's also a voice for Christ. Expertise plus the will of God is the equation for supernatural growth. Smart, hardworking people can seem to succeed without God, but only this formula will allow you to experience a life of wild expectance. And that formula, again, is expertise. So Brian is a subject matter expert when it comes to marketing and online commerce. But Ben says expertise plus the will of God is the equation for supernatural growth. And with Brian, you get both of those things. So I just want to say that, Brian, because I want our listeners to understand you are an expert in this particular area. So if they need marketing help, if they are interested in LeadFlows, I really want them to reach out to you, because I don't know one business that doesn't need more leads coming in, and you seem to make it really simple. But you know, the book Wild Expectance, Start Living Your Life How God Designed It, you say you should live every day with an expectation that God is going to do big things through you and for you. And I absolutely love this. You know, there's just so much good stuff in here, but I have one story that I would love for you to tell in our time that's remaining, and then we'll talk about something extra. You got lots of wild, only God experiences that are sprinkled throughout this book, but I would love to tell you to tell our listeners, how, you know, you were a regular at the American Music Awards, and that's a whole nother story. But you had this unbelievable opportunity to catch a ride with somebody really famous. And can you condense that story and tell us? Because I was just blown away when I read this, Brian. And just, you know, you truly have led a life that is probably more than you could ask or imagine.
Sure thing, Lisa. So I was given VIP tickets to the American Music Awards for a number of years. And it's because I got connected to the person that booked all the artists' hotels for the American Music Awards. And that was, God totally connected me to him, because I felt God wanted me to go to a certain coffee shop on a certain day. And I met him there, right? And so suddenly I'm getting VIP tickets every single year to this award show. And I remember one year he's talking to me about the different people he's working with in terms of booking their hotels. And he tells me that there's a surprise this year for the American Music Awards, that MC Hammer is going to close out the show with Psy, and that he was working on getting his hotel booked. And he's telling me where he's booking MC Hammer's hotel at, right? And I knew that MC Hammer was a Christian, and I was at the time a spoken missionary. And I also knew that he mentored this other rapper that used to do campus ministry also at UCLA. You know, and so I'm like, well, he's his mentor and he does campus ministry at UCLA, or at least he used to do it. And I was currently doing it. So maybe he'll like me. And I just had like a desire in my heart to meet MC Hammer, but I didn't know how that was going to happen because I didn't know him. I didn't have any introductions to him, but it was just a desire in my heart. And as we were driving to the American Music Awards, my friend of mine and myself were praying towards this direction, trusting God. And then at the American Music Awards, in front of us, we see this person that I sense I'm supposed to talk to. And I wanted to get into the after party and I didn't have tickets. But a couple times in the past, I was able to fight my way in there. But I didn't have tickets or any way to get into the after party. But it was my desire to somehow get into the after party. And I sensed I was supposed to talk to this certain person. And so I figured out how to talk to this total stranger because I felt God wanted me to talk to him. And in that process, he gets us into the after party because it turns out that his friend put on the whole VIP after party, you know, and he just happens to get me into the after party with my friend. And then, so we're in the after party and then I see a dance floor and I used to break dance. And so I go over to the dance floor and I'm break dancing and I see a guy there that he's like probably, you know, around my age or younger. And he had a lanyard on that said Hammer. And I'm like, oh, this guy's with MC Hammer's entourage. And it turns out it's his son. And I ask him where MC Hammer was at. And he was actually at the party and he was in the corner. And I'm like, well, maybe if I keep, you know, dancing near this guy, he'll come over. So he comes over and I'm like, here's my chance to approach him. I'm like, I made it this far, you know, pray. Thank you, God. I'm going to finally meet MC Hammer. He's closed out the show in front of tens of millions of people. So I walk up to him and I'm trying to think what I'm going to say to him. And so I ask him if he knows this guy that I'm faintly acquainted with. And ironically, the guy who I'm faintly acquainted with, that MC Hammer mentored, the friend who I brought with me, was the person who introduced me to this guy. So they were kind of friends, you know, acquaintances. And so that was totally wild how that's all full circle. But I go up to him and I ask him if he knows this person. And when I said that, his countenance changed, Lisa. He looks at me. He says, yeah, I know him. He's family. And then he pulls out his phone and he says, look, he's calling me now. Here, you take it. And he hands me his phone. And I'm like, what? He just handed me his phone here. And I answer it. And it's like crazy loud in a Ritz-Carlton Diamond Ballroom. So I'm running out of the ballroom to answer the call. And I'm thinking, he's probably thinking this guy just took off my phone, you know? And then so I he doesn't ask the guy on the other line doesn't ask me why I'm answering MC Hammer's phone either. So nobody asks me why I'm answering the phone. It's ridiculous.
Right.
He's like, where you guys at? And I tell him where we're at. And then we're walking back. And I had this thought in my mind that I was supposed to text him where we were at from my phone. And I've never called the guy before in my life, but I had his number because my friend who I brought with me to the American Music Awards gave me his number like a couple years earlier, which I never used. Yeah. So I text him and I'm like, I don't know if it's still his number. So I text him and he responds. And suddenly I'm now the liaison. He's texting me instead of MC Hammer. And then they can't get into the show. And so he's texting me and tells me they can't get in the show. And I go up to Hammer and I said, they've not let them in. And he's like, take me to him. So now I'm like leading MC Hammer and his entire entourage out of the alley, down these layers of security to get to his friend. And then so we connect with this friend and now we're trying to get back into the show. And then the security didn't realize it was MC Hammer. So then they're not allowing us into the after party. And he's like, you don't understand. This is my party.
This is my party.
Eventually the security realized that it was MC Hammer and they're really, you know, apologetic and let us back into the after party. So then my friend's connecting with MC Hammer's friend and eventually my friend had to leave and he was my ride and Uber and Lyft hadn't been invented yet. And I didn't really have money for a cab and I'd never called a cab before in my life at that point. So I really didn't even know how to call a cab. And at this point, I don't even know if I had a smartphone at this point in place. I don't remember. And, cause this is a while ago. And, so my friend leaves and I'm like, well, I'll trust God. He'll get me home somehow. I'll figure this out, but I'm not leaving this moment. I'm enjoying this moment. I'm not leaving early. Right.
Right.
So eventually the party dies down. Everybody's walking to the car and then MC Hammer's friend leaves from the parking lot. And just me you know, MC Hammer and like his, I think, son and driver and maybe like bodyguard, maybe. I don't remember. I think that's who it was. And I'm like, okay, Lord, I know what hotel he's staying at. And I know that hotel is near where I live at. I don't care who he is. I need to ride home. And I'm like, you're staying at the W Hotel, right? And he says, yeah. He doesn't ask me why I know that.
You're right.
You know, there's so many things that nobody asks questions and it doesn't make right. No sense.
Right.
I'm like, you're staying at a W, right? And he said, yeah. And I'm like, do you mind if I catch a ride with you? I live there. I live near there and my ride left. And he says, sure. So then I get in the vehicle. His driver's driving us. And like, I'm like in the back seat of like, I think it's the Escalade, driving home. And then we get to the hotel. And then he has his driver drive you back to my place.
To your place.
And at that moment, I didn't know how I was going to get back from the hotel to my place, but I'm like, at least I'm closer, right?
Right, exactly. You know? Oh my goodness. Yeah. What a wild story.
It was crazy. But then later that night, like I was still hungry from like a crazy night. And so I felt like I need to walk to a local taco truck. And in that process, I walked by this guy that's also walking around randomly at nighttime. And he's probably thinking, why am I walking around at night? He's probably thinking, you know? And mm-hmm. So I sense that I should talk to him. And this is a total stranger. And give him the little bit of money I had in my wallet, which was like $100 that wasn't going to be used on a cab because it was going to be used on, I think, utilities probably, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I can't give this guy this money. I don't know who this guy is. He's going to spend on drugs. You know, what the heck? And I feel like I'm supposed to talk to the guy. And I said, how's he doing financially? He says, fine. And I'm thinking, okay, he's good to go. But then I really sense that God's like, give him the money. So I'm like, okay, I'll give him this money. And so I give him the $100 and he like starts breaking down emotionally. And then I pray with him and he gives his life to Christ and he experiences God in a very powerful way. I go into more details on this in the book, but he experiences mm-hmm. God in a very powerful way. And then I'm walking away and I sense God speak to me in that moment, Lisa. And he said, that was nothing compared to the 20 things that had to happen for MC Hammer to drive me home. But that was something regarding my obedience to give this guy at midnight this money and pray with him for him to become a believer. And
incredible.
That was nothing, but that was something.
That was something.
And what that spoke to me was that God can do all these incredible things greater than we can think or imagine, you know, but are we willing to do what matters to God? God will do things that matter to us. And it mattered to me to get into the meet MC Hammer, but will we do what matters to God? And what matters to God is us loving our brothers and sisters, loving our neighbor and us sharing our faith and people coming to faith in Jesus. That's what matters to God. Are we willing?
That's so powerful.
Are we
Brian.
Willing to be obedient, though, in the marketplace? Are we willing to share our faith to our friends, our family, our coworkers, our boss, you know, people that report to us, strangers? Are we willing or are we scared about what people think of us? You know, mm-hmm. If you truly love people, you will share what you know to be true.
Amen. Amen. It's so powerful. I love it. Well, you and I didn't tell you this is a 10-hour podcast, did I? Teasing. But we could literally talk for 10 hours. I have to ask you though, Brian, what do you believe is something extra that every leader needs?
I believe that every leader needs to care about your team and to care about your vendors and your customers more than you care about yourself. Jesus said that you're supposed to love your brothers and sisters as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself. And what I mean by that is maybe you're meeting with a potential customer and in that moment, instead of you trying to go in to close the deal, you realize that you need to encourage them spiritually and you pivot the conversation to figure out how are they doing emotionally? Because a lot of times people, you know, it's just, you don't go deep and maybe they're hurting inside, you know, maybe they're going through a divorce, you know, maybe they just lost a huge account. Or maybe they don't know how they're going to be able to handle a situation. And by caring about them as a person, you know, you can take the leadership that you've developed over the years and really pour into them. and encourage them. And maybe you'll get that sale, maybe you won't get that sale, but you're loving them as a person, and them as an individual matters more than them as your customer. Loving them as individual matters more than them as your vendor. Loving them more as an individual matters more than them as your employee.
Yeah, so good. Well, Brian, this has been so much fun for me. Thank you so much. Thank you for just being who you are, and being able to share all your wisdom and your stories. I want people to go get your book, Wild Expectance. I want them to go check out Lead Flows. Reach out to Brian. I guarantee you, you will be blessed if you do. He's just a remarkable young man. So thank you again for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.